Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Smith. It's been 5 years since Hurricane Dorian unleashed its fury on the Bahamas. While there are tangible markers of recovery and even progress, this doesn't tell the whole story. Beneath the surface, there are scars, physical and emotional. Joining us today is part of the team of five scholars who collaborated on a research project that takes an unflinching look at the lasting effect and legacy of Hurricane Dorian in a study entitled, We Are Not Okay, The Bahamian Plantation of Scene, Hurricane Dorian, and the Limits of Academic Genre. Joining us today is Dr. Nicolette Bethel, a cultural anthropologist, playwright, and professor at the University of the Bahamas. Welcome, Dr. Bethel.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're so formal, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We can call each other now what we call each other on the street.
Well, I don't know if we want to go that far, but we'll go with Craig and Nico, okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, good. Nico, talk to me about this paper. It's a collaboration. Tell us how it came about, and how did you navigate writing about something so deeply personal, then bringing that all together in this collaborative effort?
So that is a great question. So first of all, I guess the thing is that for me, one of the greatest things working on this project is that I'm actually working with three other anthropologists. There are four anthropologists behind this paper. And it's not common for me in this part of the world to be working with other anthropologists. So I had known both Amelia and Sarah before this time in different capacities, but dating back to their PhD work, which was done in the Bahamas. They're both environmental anthropologists focusing on different things. And Amelia had, in particular, had kept in touch. And then when Hurricane Dorian struck, she'd already started to do some work on the hurricanes that were hitting the Caribbean. But of course, Hurricane Dorian was unique. And she contacted me as soon as we could get back in touch, which was like, you know, the week after the hurricane, and said that she and Sarah had applied for what they call a rapid grant, which is a really quick grant that allows people to study natural disasters, to look at what was happening in Abaco in particular, because by that time, Amelia was working in Abaco along with Kenny. Kenny was doing some work in Abaco. And Sarah had married a Bahamian who's had many connections in Abaco. So that was kind of a natural fit. And then, of course, Adele has been doing research on climate change for years and has basically been a predictor of the kind of thing that happened with Dorian. So we roped in all of these people, and we were going to do a traditional ethnographic study looking at the community and looking at what had happened. I was going to be focusing on Grand Bahama because I had just got back, literally, it wasn't even 6 days. I had just got back from visiting the Northern Bahamas campus in my capacity as chair of social sciences. And, you know, after Dorian, where I had been was gone, right? Mm-hmm. So we were all basically in different levels of shock. And we started working like typical scholars with our research proposal and our methodologies and all the rest of it. And as time went on, we realized that we just couldn't write this thing. We couldn't put it together. And so we talked a lot about how we were going to publish from our experiences. And eventually, We ended up with this, and I don't really want to steal Amelia's thunder because she, I think, was the originator of the idea of an autoethnographics piece. But we struggled. We struggled for quite a bit on how to deliver the work.
What led to the struggle specifically?
Well, so the first thing I remember was two things. Three things that happened with me. So Dorian happened in the middle of our preparations for Shakespeare in Paradise, which meant that when Kenny and Amelia and later Sarah were able to come back to Nassau, to the Bahamas, which was Kenny went like as soon as he could, because he had actual property in Abaco, and Amelia came as soon as she could, which was kind of like in the in the fall break for her in teaching. I was still tied up with Shakespeare in Paradise, so I could not travel with them to Abaco. And I also, to be honest, my focus was not on Abaco. I really wanted to go to Grand Bahama to see, just to see, just because that was just blowing me away. It was so close that when I was in Grand Bahama visiting the Northern Bahamas campus, President Strawn was not there. Right, Ian was in Nassau. He said he was in Nassau battening his Nassau home for Dorian, and then he went back to Grand Bahama and he wrote out the story in Grand Bahama. That was how close it was. Dorian was already traveling when I was in Freeport, so I was anxious to get back to Freeport, which I was able to do in November. And then we did interviews. We carried out interviews with people, but I think that Amelia, if she it. If she can talk about it, we'll say they could not, we could not do your typical ethnographic study because, first of all, the landscape was so completely changed. And if anybody wants to see like almost a real time thing of that, Ian Bethel Bennett has also done some work on his own, some autoethnographic work on his experience of Dorian and going back to Abaco. And he describes the actual landscape. But Amelia was trying to talk to people, and they were just in such deep shock that we could not function as academics. We couldn't function. We couldn't separate. Academics are supposed to have a distance or have a separation, have an analytical space between them and whatever it is they're studying. We just could not maintain that. We couldn't do it. And so that was the struggle.
Okay, so I think that this brings us to, can you talk a little bit about the title of the paper? Because I think you're sort of getting at that a little bit. So
Yeah.
can you unpack that for our listeners a little bit so we have a better understanding? We Are Not Okay, The Bahamian Plantationist Scene, Hurricane Dorian, and the Limits of Academic Genre. So just break down the different parts of that title for us so we get a better understanding of what's going on with the title and what the work that you're doing throughout the paper.
Okay, so I'll start with the concept of the plantationist scene. Because Sarah and Adele in particular and Amelia are environmental workers, climate change, Adele is a climate change geographer and the other two are environmental anthropologists. They are working in a space, a theoretical space, that has adopted certain terms to refer to the geological era that we find ourselves in. As a cultural anthropologist, I had to be introduced to that tr those terms as well. But Amelia's work deals with what she calls the Anthropocene, which is the geological era that has been impacted by human activity, the geological area in which the Earth has been reshaped or reformulated by human activity. And then the subset of the Anthropocene is the plantationocene, which is what we used to refer to as the Caribbean, right? The area of the New World that was shaped not only by human activity, but by humans' particular activity, the clearing of spaces of people and of vegetation to create plantations to generate revenue for places far removed from the plantations. And so there is a theory in environmental anthropology that looks at the impact of that, of the plantation on the realities of the Caribbean. And so that's where that term comes from, the Plantationocene. So it's a subset of the Anthropocene, our era, the modern era, how it was impacted by not just accidental human action, but conscious human action, right? And hurricanes like Dorian are the result. They're not accidental. They are not avoidable. They are part of our landscape, and it is because of human action. And then the limits of academic genre, that whole idea in the social sciences, our origins, we like to believe, are the taking of what we looked at as the power of the natural sciences, being able to unlock the secrets of the world, of the natural world, to change, to enable this anthropocenic, I don't know if that's the right word, activity, right? So understanding how the natural world worked led to the kinds of impacts that humans have had on the world. We now understand how, things work, and so we make adjustments. Social scientists, wanting to get in on that magic, decided they were going to use that we were going to use the same techniques, the same methods to study humans and human societies and human groups and so on. And so, as social scientists, we maintain a lot of the fictions that we maintain a set of fictions that assume that we can study human beings in the same way that, say, people can study rocks and the earth and so on. Maintaining a certain distance, a certain idea of objectivity, a certain idea of fixity, the positivist paradigm, right? And academic genre, even though with the 21st century, social scientists are recognizing that this is fiction and that we need to find different methods and different ways of engaging with people who are just like us, right? That doesn't mean that our disciplines have fully made the shift. The tools that we have are positivist tools, are tools that assume that the world is fixed and doesn't change and can be studied easily, right? And that's what we're talking about with the limits of academic genre. We could not study Hurricane Dorian and its aftermath using the tools that we had. And so that's what the title is saying.
Okay. And a part of what your title is saying as well is we are not okay.
That's right.
Expand on that. Who's the we that this references? I don't think it's an individual we,
No.
and I don't even think it's just a local we. Can you talk a little bit more about this we?
So I think the we in the title is really looking at us as scholars, as academics, that whole idea that you can be okay and maintain this distance and study people. None of us were. It wasn't just us, because there were other people who were involved in the initial Rapid Grant. Several of them were some of the psychologists who were on the ground in Abaco and in Grand Bahama, dealing with everybody from the people who were impacted by the hurricane to the first responders, right? Who nobody ever really thinks about dealing with. And the psychologists, the clinical psychologists who were on the ground are not okay. None of us could approach this event with any level of neutrality. And it was traumatic. We all suffered trauma. And so the first level of we, obviously, is us as academics. And then, of course, it extends to the we of the people who got affected, the we of the people in Abaco and Grand Bahama, but the we of the wider Bahamas, the we of the people in New Providence who just could sit there and watch, right? And then had to deal with the aftermath of all the displaced people. New Providence's population, oh, between 2010 and 2022, when they did the next census, increased by 5%, went from 70% of the total population to 75% of the total population. And a lot of that is the displacement post-Dorian. And we are not okay.
So, Dr. Bethel, I know that you've been narrating Bahamian life through essays, through your plays for many years now. What was the hardest part of reliving these experiences while researching and writing this project?
So, somewhere, I don't know, about 6 months after, while we were still trying to pull together, maybe even a year after, While we were still trying to pull together our data, which we had collected, right? And what we were trying to make sense of, Amelia said, "Look, this is just really hard. What do you think?" She asked all of us, "What do you think of us turning this into autoethnography and putting ourselves in the narrative and creating something that writes about our response to this? We still have our data. We still have to analyze it. Maybe 5 years is enough of a distance to be able to put our tools back to use." But she said, "What do you think of an autoethnographic approach?" And everybody was like, "Yeah, that sounds great," including me. But every time I sat down to try and write this thing, I couldn't even get a coherent narrative in prose. And what I wrote was poetry. Well, I could only write in poetry to process the magnitude. Like I remember watching the video of Security Officer Marinard, who stayed to keep watch over the campus, and watching him from the second floor of the UB campus, watching all the things that I had just been walking through, floating away, like the part of the building that was the residence is just floating away, the gas tanks floating away, the cars floating away on the waves. And then also having to navigate the fact that my host, who was the dean of students, the dean of faculty at UB North, who was trapped in his house for like 4 days after the hurricane because nobody could get to him, right? Those things are not, those things I could not, I couldn't figure out how to put that into my autoethnographic experience. And so I just had, it came out in poetry.
Yeah, it's one thing to document history, but another to relive the trauma while doing so, Nico.
That's right. That's exactly.
At this moment, let's take our first break here, and we'll be back. This is University Drive. We return after these messages. Stay with us.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics in procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields, and they're here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Welcome back to University Drive. We're here in conversation with Dr. Nicolette Bethel, and joining us now is Dr. Amelia Moore, an environmental anthropologist from the University of Rhode Island. Dr. Moore, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good
Pleasure.
It's good to have you here. And so we're discussing your work on the research paper, We Are Not Okay. It's a very personal and raw look at Hurricane Dorian's lasting impact. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you became involved in the project?
Sure. Well, I've been working in the Bahamas as an anthropologist, an American anthropologist working in the Bahamas for many years. I met Nico when I was a graduate student, and was a kind of a mentor as a much more accomplished anthropologist than I. And we stayed in touch and talked about Bahamian culture, Bahamian change, the tourism industry. I have a background in the anthropology of tourism as well as environmental anthropology. So, the Bahamas has always been kind of one of the most fascinating places to understand the development of the tourism industry. But when the hurricane came, I immediately thought about what everybody was doing in terms of like how were they surviving? How were they maintaining connection? How were they finding the people they needed to find to ha for help? And I immediately thought, we need anthropologists to think about this. And I immediately thought we need Nico. And so I didn't even know what we wanted to do specifically, in those first days, but reached out really quickly, soon after to try to collaborate and to think about, anthropologists are really useless in an emergency.
Right. Not like psychologists, right?
Right. What do we have to offer? And so I was thinking about that, what do I have to offer? What do we have to offer? And it was, trying to contextualize the storm and its aftermath and these kind of larger social patterns, and also to see what new patterns are emerging, because there's, that's life, constant process of emergence, and so, we reached out with to other collaborators as well, the other co-authors on this piece, and we went from there.
Okay. And so Nico was sort of t talking to us a bit about the idea of the plantational scene. Can you enlighten us a little bit more on that and that terminology and the meanings behind that?
Yeah, I'll do my best. So it's part of that great process of contextualizing or understanding the contingencies that bring us to that help us understand the present, and the shape and patterns that form it. And there's been a discussion about the Anthropocene coming out of climate change and the sciences, and I understand you've already discussed that a bit. The humanity is a driving force for in planetary, ecological, and environmental change, and the argument coming out of geology. But almost immediately, which is a good thing, as soon as this concept was posited, social scientists, critical scholars, Caribbean scholars, people from the global south started pushing back against that concept that, humanity is responsible for carbon emissions and planetary warming and ecological degradation. It's not everybody everywhere all the time, always. There are particular people, particular patterns, particular populations who have pushed the planet into this geological phase. And it's tied to industrialization. It's tied to capitalism. It's tied to the industries that generate the emissions in the first place. And those industries have a history. And the history of those industries, many scholars argue, is in the colonial era, the age of imperialism, age of global extraction, the plantation era. I know that many Bahamian scholars are actually, experts in the argument about the relationship between the tourism industry and the plantation economy, for example. So the plantation is seen as a concept that, like, no, we actually get to this era of global change because of the economic and social and geological and environmental patterns inspired by the plantation economy and its success, even though it takes many forms and iterations, and it wasn't, agriculturally successful in the Bahamas, it took other forms. So people argue that that's an actually more critically aware and more nuanced argument than the Anthropocene, which is, flatly about humanity, which is an argument without a lot of responsibility. The plantationocene is an attempt to kind of put blame where it belongs for many scholars, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, and I think it's so important and interesting that you're making these connections, right? Because a lot of times, again, the idea that, well, it's an act of God, it's just nature, right? And so there's nothing that anybody can do about an act of God or nature, right? But I think that what your study does in grounding these things to a particular history, and not just the history, but what's actually going on today is really important for us to think about, especially for those of us in this region. One of my, in reading your piece, what got my attention early on in it is the statement, none of the authors of this chapter consider this hurricane to be a quote, natural disaster, nor do we put much stock in calls for apolitical or ahistorical forms of resilience. I love that line. Can any of you talk to us a little bit about
Well, that's Amelia's line, so I can let her go with
that?
it.
Yeah. Then this also comes from, a long history of disaster studies, where, vulnerability is not something that people aren't just born vulnerable, right? There are historical and social and political and economic patterns that make it so that some people live in more precarious places and more precarious ways and less access to to insurance, less access to support, less access to infrastructure. And so that when events like catastrophic storms hit, the level of damage and degradation is so much more extreme, and in particular places that have been kind of allowed, or people even benefit from their precarity and vulnerability of the places and of the people who live there. So these are unnatural disasters in that they're the result of socio-political, economic, cultural dynamics, not, as you said, not acts of God. And we just really want to begin from that understanding. That was, and I think the plantation is seen as a concept, does a lot of that work for us.
Right. And I think too, with that kind of discourse, right, it's always about us. Well, just getting back to your the quote I used just now, again, this resilience, we can just bounce back and we can do it and we can pull ourselves up by the bootstrap. And what it made me really think about that statement was I spoke to Dr. Nambi Hall Campbell the other day when she was talking about reparations, right? And when the conversation about reparations is invoked, people, I would argue Bahamians in general, again, try to oftentimes push that away. Oh, slavery was such a long time ago. Therefore, i.e., this reparations talk is, whatever. But I think in what you've done here in sort of showing us that there is a history, and that history has created very real dynamics that continue to perpetuate itself. And even with these quote unquote natural disasters, or what we want to call natural disasters, we can actually trace them back historically to see how they may impact poor people, people of color, people have been disenfranchised, right? In all the ways that people who are calling for reparations are talking about the ways in which these spaces have been used and abused, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, and that makes me think, and Nyambi's work always makes me think, what would it mean for people to, think about their climate vulnerability as a aspect of reparations? Like that it's not just about cash, right?
Right.
It's about our ability to be resilient and our, to have infrastructure that supports us, to have a safe relationship with the coastline. Like, how do we make that part of the conversation? And, they tried to do that at the United Nations, but they don't use the language of reparations, and maybe
Right.
they should.
Right.
Right.
Nico, you're saying?
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, I mean, I don't know that I have that much left to add. It's just that I was thinking I was just having a conversation with one of my classes where this exact topic came up. I was really interested that the students themselves raised the question of reparations, but of course the conversation went in expected ways where people are saying, well, we have to do our own thing, we have to take responsibility. And I'm like, even if we have to take responsibility, the playing field is not level. We're not starting from the same point as everybody else because everybody else is higher because of the labor of our ancestors, which has not been paid for. And because of the scraping of our lands, which results in our vulnerability. And how do we fix that? It doesn't, yeah, all humans have some complicity on some level because we're not all perfect, but you cannot hide behind that concept that we're all similar and that we all have to do the hard work. When for 500 years, who was doing the hard work and who was reaping the benefit? Right? And then how do we fix that?
And how we, how we currently at a disadvantage because of that.
Because of that. Exactly. Or I don't even know if I want to say we're at a disadvantage. Maybe I want to say the people who took advantage of our ancestors' labor are at a great over advantage because of that theft.
So right now we're talking 5 years ago. So the survivors of Hurricane Dorian and those who didn't survive have somewhat faded from the news headlines. How do you both see this research project in terms of validating those experiences of those people and maybe reminding us of the impact that that had?
Well, I guess the main thing that I would say is the experience that I had when presenting at the publication of this back in October. And the audience, I had a little bit of trepidation because I was like, I don't know who's in the room. I don't know if there was anybody from Abaco or Grand Bahama, but we're just going to go ahead and see what happens. And there was a woman who had been in Grand Bahama during Hurricane Dorian. And there were tears, like, but this work is important because it's not easy. But she thanked us for helping her, for seeing her, for recognizing that we are not just for saying we're not okay, right? People who had to get on with their lives have had to behave as though they're okay, and they're not. And, I mean, we know that the land is not okay. I was also involved in a later study. I wasn't involved in the publication, but I was involved in some of the planning and the discussions around it. That was a biological, a forestry study that had environmental anthropological connections. And looking at the water table in Grand Bahama, and the water table in Grand Bahama is 5 years on, is still not settled. There's still areas of Grand Bahama where the water is brackish. Sans Beer Brewery only just was able to restart brewing And one of the things that Amelia and I collaborated on a couple of years ago with one of my classes, an ethnographic class, demonstrates that one of the students actually didn't study the Dorian impact. She was studying the Joaquin impact, which is 8 years ago now, 8 to 9 years. And after 8 to 9 years, almost 10, it's 10 years since Hurricane Joaquin now. That class was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, they are still not okay, right? By studying what happened in Joaquin, and Joaquin was terrible, but it wasn't Dorian, right? And people in Long Island are not okay. People in Ragged Island may never be okay, right? We gotta stop talking about these acts of God and thinking that we can come through with prayer and fortitude, because we are not okay.
Right, and to stop thinking about them as like these discrete incidents.
Yes.
No, they have a like trauma that stays and becomes embodied, and we pretend that they're over, and they just become absorbed in really painful ways.
All right, ladies, let's pause on these sobering insights for our final break. When we return, we'll talk about what needs to change, what gives us hope, and what comes next. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics and procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields, and they're here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies, and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Nicolette Bethel and Dr. Amelia Moore, and they're discussing their work, We Are Not Okay, The Bahamian Plantationocene, Hurricane Dorian, and the Limits of Academic Genre. So when we left, we were talking about the ways in which we sort of placate ourselves, I would argue, in discussions about hurricanes as acts of gods. And so what your research is sort of getting at is forcing us to look at the ways in which there are people who are implicated in these disasters, some more so than others. But in your piece, should I say, you were a bit critical about responses, I would say, Nico, to some of the responses to the disasters. Correct me if I'm...
Don't get me started, Greg. I don't think this show is long enough. Yeah, very, very critical.
Okay. So noting that, in the 5 years, have you seen any evidence of our disaster response improving since Dorian?
No.
We still trapped in the old patterns.
No, I don't see I don't see anything. I mean, okay, so I think the thing that horrified me the most during Dorian was the idea that, well, there were two things, and they were linked and parallel. And I'm not trying to personalize blame, but this is the magnitude of the failure that I think of the response of our government. Governments are in place to make sure that when something like this happens, people have a means of recovery. Otherwise, what is the good of a government, right? So there are two things that happened. The first thing was that people ran to shelters. There was a shelter in Abaco that people went to, and the shelter was a church. And the people who went to that shelter, the vast majority of them, I don't want to say the vast majority because I don't know the numbers, but many of them died in the shelter because the shelter was inadequate. And why was it inadequate? Because I think that we are too cavalier about this idea of a hurricane shelter and what is required if people are trapped in this kind of a situation. And the fact that that happened in Abaco, which is not a center of population, even though it was one of the three most populous areas, makes me, I mean, you said you wanted to end on an idea of hope. I don't have hope. If that kind of a hurricane hits New Providence, there will be no Bahamas afterwards because we are not prepared. It's not just we're not okay, we're not prepared. I don't even know what the shelters are. I don't know how people inspect the shelters. I don't know what the requirements are for shelters. I don't know if shelters have to have water and food enough for the catchment area that they're serving. I don't know any of that. I don't know whether I can tell you something. I had a relative who did not leave Abaco because he had a pet. He had a dog that he was not going to leave behind. So he risked his life and his son's life to stay with the dog. All right. Are shelters taking that into consideration? That is a reality. Are shelters pet friendly? Are shelters secure? Are shelters going to be places where there's going to be an increase in violence, interpersonal or not? We already have an interpersonally violent society. You know, if we have to move, if we have to do these things, who's going to realistically trust the government and the shelters that they have designated to serve the needs? I don't have that trust.
Wow, that's a lot. So, in that case, then, what can we do then? What can we do to move beyond documenting these disasters and actually becoming better prepared? How can the University of the Bahamas, play a bigger role in disaster preparedness and even in healing? Because I think a part of the we are not okay, right? It means that we have not yet healed. And so, how can we move towards that? What role does the university have in one, in getting us prepared in the ways that you're talking about, and then also finding ways to heal?
I want to say that my experience of the University of the Bahamas after the two most recent hurricanes that we experienced was a very positive one. And that may have been because at the time, Dr. Smith, who was in charge of the university, is a trained psychologist and he understood what needed to be done. One of the things that happened after Hurricane Matthew was that the university survived. So the university is a potential shelter. So I think the university could. Even though it is in a low-lying area, the university could do what it can to model the kind of preparedness that the rest of the country should be aiming for, since our governments have decided that preparedness is not a doesn't seem to be a public requirement, but something that must be done by private individuals, then the university should take that on and lean into it and become the kind of model shelter that could exist. Certainly after the hurricanes, I remember the university opened up and said, if you don't have electricity, we have electricity. If you don't have water, we have showers. If you don't have beds, we have dry places. Come and stay at the university. If and that was open to the whole of the university community. That's the kind of thing I think we can lead with. But also, I think we need to lend our voice to saying what needs to be put in place by the government. How, you know, what things were missing? And how do we move forward? How do we fix that?
Dr. Moore, any suggestions from you in terms of ways that we could become more prepared or maybe engage the conversation in a real sort of way, in ways that we have not been engaging the conversation thus far?
I think one of the things that we were really struck by in this project was just how many people had to come together to as a, in response, right? Who had to, volunteer, private industry, nonprofits, everything but the government, it seemed like at a certain point. And I think realizing that those real interpersonal connections that people have to their fellow islanders across islands internationally, like that, those are really the vectors of strength. How do we advocate to kind of change the model of disaster planning so that those more informal vectors actually have the stronger capacity to even to leap into action, or to become a source of security in a legal and visible way. I think there's something to that. I don't know exactly, how to do it, but I think there's something to that. And I think, the universities play a huge role in the sense of, giving people the platform to advocate, giving people the platform to have these really difficult conversations and discussions, and to have them in public and out loud, and to, keep a record of them and make sure that, they get heard. I think all of those things need to happen to kind of articulate, what was the most effective thing and what were the least effective things, like the shelters that were not actually safe places. Come together, utilize the university as a space to come together to have that conversation. I think now is exactly the time to do it, before the next storm, which is coming, which is always coming.
I wonder if I'm wondering in terms of what would you like to see? How do you want this paper? What would you like to see happen with this paper? I'm asking because I think that it could be a part of a larger project. In my mind, I'm just thinking because, again, as academics, you have the language in which to tell these stories. But Nico, even earlier on, you were saying that, even with your training, you couldn't find the right words, and that led you to poetry. So sometimes academic discourse isn't, the right thing. But I'm also worried. I'm not worried. I'm also interested in those people because even with your training, though, you had a way of sort of approaching this issue, and maybe talking about it, writing about it is cathartic. I would, right? Is somewhat cathartic. I'm wondering if there could be a larger project where the stories of the people, right, who aren't academics, people who suffered and whatnot, is there a way to gather their stories? Could that be a part of a larger project in terms of even thinking about the healing? And again, as you were talking, I was thinking about, well, University of the Bahamas and with the university and what do we do? And are there, I think that Helen Klinaris sort of had a couple workshops after working through trauma, writing through trauma, and so on. I'm wondering if there's another aspect of this project that can maybe extend to the larger community.
I mean, I think that, yes, absolutely. I think that there is a lot of work that can be done in this regard. And the university's already started to do it because School of English did some work with writing about the trauma some time ago, right? Shortly after Dorian. I mean, I think that
Yes, I
maybe
think that was Dr.
I was
Hel
asking
and
first
Dr. First. Yes.
Dr. Helberg, right? So I think it's already been started, and I think that Dr. Bethel Bennett is continuing to write. He's continuing to do this. His work is probably one of the most complete records of autoethnographic study. One of the things that we were asked is to just say a little bit about what ethnography is. Ethnography is the anthropologist's record of holistic living. So anthropologists will go into a society and experience it all and try and get a rounded understanding of the entire context of their experience in that society as a means to understanding aspects of that society. I don't know, Amelia, if you want to add anything to that or approach it slightly differently. And autoethnography is putting yourself in there and writing your own perspective as part of that.
Yeah, I think, a larger project is, is one that we've been thinking about where, it's not just documenting autoethnographically our own experience in the Bahamas, but also people's lived experience who, we've done so many interviews of people who were survivors and responders and who were part of some of this healing enterprise as well. But then also thinking about what does that look like regionally, because the storms are not only experienced by the Bahamas and Bahamian Islands, they're all in across the entire region. They're not this discrete thing that these, as we said before, these acts of God that hit one place or another place as these individualized unitary things. This is a We've been conceptualizing it as an Atlantic storm society, people who are connected because of hurricanes in ways that they otherwise wouldn't be, or that their connections become stronger or molded by the experience of these larger, more intense storms. And so thinking about how to continue this project in ways that transcend some of those boundaries, those island boundaries, national boundaries, to think in more regional way. I think that's something that, we'd like to continue to do moving forward. And
Yeah.
ethnographically, like, what does it mean for people to experience the world in a way that is connected by storms? Have we articulated that before? That's a human experience. What does it mean to live that?
Right. It's very interesting because talking about as we connect Dorian to all the other storms that we've experienced. I mean, if you lose your home to a storm, I don't think it matters which island you're on. That experience is gonna resonate, right? And you will have that in common. And we can learn from other experiences. We can learn best practice and worst practice. And by thinking beyond the borders, by thinking beyond the idea that these are once in a lifetime events, by acknowledging that maybe they're not. I think we can learn something. I don't know. I don't want to say what it is yet, but we can learn something.
Another thing that was that really, really struck me from this work was the role of social media and the internet in the way in which people were connected because of this storm. I think we'd like to explore that further as well. Like everybody experienced this hurricane
Yeah.
on WhatsApp, whether you were on
Yeah,
one of the islands that were hit or not.
it was very interesting because even in the quote unquote relatively safe space of Nassau where I was, and I wasn't even on one of the ends because again, certain ends of the island experienced more than what I experienced. But in getting these constant updates via WhatsApp and whatnot, I was in Abaco, I was in Grand Bahama, and then I had family in Grand Bahama anyway, and so I was on the phone with them. And so yeah, even for those of us who were not in the contact zone, we were still a part of it and going through it. and experiencing that trauma. And I actually don't think that a lot of us think about it in that way, in terms of the trauma of it. And I think that maybe there needs to be work on that as well,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
we're
Yeah.
all affected.
Everyone was traumatized in new horrible ways. Yeah.
Right. In ways, yeah, in ways that we are probably not able to articulate yet, really. Yeah, so before we close, though, I want to ask both of you if there's one message you want our listeners to take away today, what would that message be? Let's talk with you, Dr. Bethel.
I think that the message would be to take note that these are not once in a lifetime things. This is the new normal, and we need to adjust the way that we have thought about hurricanes in the Bahamas and put in place the protocols and the procedures that will allow us to continue as a society and as a nation.
And I think, again, and it made me think again back to your paper too, in terms of several of you talked about, again, our very cavalier relationship to hurricanes, right? Or it has been anyway in the past. Oh, it's just some breeze. Don't worry about it. It could blow over. Oh, it's just a category two, right? And the sobering reality of what actually hit us. And I think forces us to renegotiate that relationship, right, that we've had in the past,
Yes,
maybe.
because these are not the storms of the past. These are the storms of the present, and we need to shift.
All right, Dr. Moore, any final thoughts for our viewers, our listeners?
Just that we're, so interconnected. The storms connect us, but that and that's can be traumatic, and these waves of trauma can flow in places that we don't expect because of it. But that also means that we can support each other. We can be prepared together. We can plan together and to think about that in new ways, to shake that up, to expand our networks in the in those ways. I think that's what I think about, at least to try to be hopeful.
Right. And a part of even the collaboration between local and international academics on this project that you guys created shows that there is a community. There's a community outside of just Nassau or the Bahamas. And I think that's really important for us to understand as well, that there is community and we're not fighting this alone.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Dr. Bethel, Dr. Moore, thank you both for your time, for your work, and for your honesty. Your research is necessary, and hopefully, our listeners will get a chance to read your research. And if you are listening and you've been moved by the discussion, if you've been impacted by Hurricane Dorian, or if you simply want to understand in a deeper way, you should look up this research and you can find it at www.ub.edu.bs. You can hover on research on the homepage and click on the International Journal of Bahamian Studies in the drop-down menu.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for University Drive. I'm Craig Smith. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.